And here we are with our garden conversation experts. We have Jerry and Judy.
Jean.
Why did say Judy?
It's all right. Close.
J's. Well, three J's in this room all at one time. What are the odds of that happening? So we're here with garden conversation. And what do we have going on today?
Well, first a reminder that if you have any questions about gardening, please send them to garden@khns.org, and hopefully we'll be able to get back to you with an answer on the air or by email. And also this Saturday at the Farmers Market, it's the last Farmers Market of the year, and from 10 to 1, there's a garden party. I don't know if Ricky Nelson will be there, but certainly there will be food and bring your wallet so that you can buy some of the last vegetables of the year.
Right. And there's also vouchers at the senior. You can pick them up at the senior center, and you can get vouchers to buy produce and whatnot there. And you can call 766-2383 or stop by the senior center to get those. Okay, so what's going on? What are our questions, Jean?
Well, we had questions a few weeks ago about porcupines, and since then we've heard from several readers with suggestions about how to keep those pests out of your garden. Jerry, do you remember some of the things people have written in about?
Well, yeah, one of the things that several years ago I attended a seminar on garden pests and their control, and the main presenter made a point that if you have something in your garden or in your barn or in your house that rodents or other pest animals are determined to get, it's like trying to keep a thief out of your house. It's very, very difficult. And so you have to use methods that are, for the most part, unpleasant. And porcupines are persistent. One of the recommendations we had to keep them out of the electric fence, which is a very effective method. If you have a rigid fence that the porcupine has to climb, an electric wire across the top at the top, would keep the garden, keep the animal out of your garden. If you try to put it down low, you'd have such problems with grass that really wouldn't work very well. Another method of fencing is a fence that's made with net-like material that's hard to climb up, and that discourages the animal. One reader had puts plastic covering over her garden at night and then removes it in the morning.
Oh my goodness, that's a lot of work.
And you also try it with a net. The net, of course, can get tangled in the garden. But even more problematic is the animal might get tangled in the net. And then you got a frightened, angry animal that you have to extricate from the net. So you won't want to do that.
Good luck with that.
Another recommendation that you hear a lot about deterring rodents especially is mothballs and coyote urine and ammonia sprayed around the plants. Mm-hmm. The things that you spray around the plants are diluted with water almost immediately if it rains, so they're not very effective. And the mothballs, at this seminar that I attended, the mothballs, the fella showed a picture of nuts in a big circle surrounded by mothballs. And he had pictures of all the animals walking right over the mothballs to get to the nuts. So I think it's probably not a very effective method.
We've tried the mothballs and haven't had very good luck.
Mm. So you have a porcupine issue?
We have had a porcupine issue.
Okay.
Several.
And the porcupines like to eat trees. They like to eat young trees and old trees. And so very good idea. So some slit tin cans that girdle the tree, not so tight that it compromises the flow of water in the tree, but to keep the animal out. And the other, there's a stuff called Tanglefoot that you can, it's actually like a glue that you paint around the tree, around the circumference of the tree, and the animal gets his foot stuck in it, and it's unpleasant for them. So that's very effective. So I think that's enough for the porcupine.
There was one on my porch on Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
This year. Yeah, I looked at it. I thought it was a cat, but it was a porcupine.
You do think they're a cat.
Yeah.
I'm glad your dog didn't find it.
Right?
Now, we have a question about harvesting potatoes. Jean?
Well, this one's easy. Our friend Donna showed me that once your plants start flowering and the flowers start to wither a bit, you can root around by the roots of the plants, dig your hand in there and pick out the big potatoes and pull them out and then pat the dirt back around the plant and it doesn't hurt anything. Mm-hmm. But then once the plants start to die back and they just fall down like they do, the only thing you can do is go ahead and pull the plants and then harvest your potatoes. And you have to be careful not to use a fork or a shovel because mm-hmm. you can, you know, damage the potatoes. So you want to be careful about starting at the edge of the pollen and then working inward. Jerry, what about kale? Lots of people have lots of kale this year. Do you recommend a variety?
Kale is a wonderful thing to grow because it loves Haynes. It loves Haynes in the summer, and it survives the winter, and you can even have it still in your garden in the spring from this year's planting. And it's actually not even too late to plant it right now. And there are several different varieties. The curly leaf variety is very popular. It grows fast. And if you live in an area that doesn't have a lot of dust, it's a good variety. If you live near a road or you have your garden near a road, it's a problem because the dust tends to accumulate in all those little curlicues, and it's kind of a problem to clean.
Huh.
But flat leaf kale is very good. There's a lacy leaf kale. And the one that has become very popular recently called dinosaur kale, a lacinato, a Tuscan kale. It's sort of gray-green and has little bubbles-like on the leaves. Mm-hmm. It's not really bubbles, but it's pretty and it tastes good.
Uh-huh.
And it's really easy to grow. And there's a lot of stuff you can do with it.
Yeah, we really like kale. We put it in soups. We put it in pasta with garlic and cheese. It's really, really good. But one of our favorite things to do with it is a kale salad, and we've been making a lot of that because we're eating a lot of fish, and it's really great with fish, and it's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
You make a real simple dressing. You squeeze lemon and use about a third of a cup of lemon juice. Add in a little salt and then whisk in maybe two-thirds a cup of olive oil. And then take some garlic cloves and just hit them with your knife so you get the paper off mm-hmm. and just let the garlic cloves steep in there while you clean your leaves. And Jerry came home with a big bunch the other day of all these different kales, so it was all pretty. And you just strip the stems off, as you know, uh-huh. and then wash them real well. And then dry them, either in a spinner or in a towel. And then roll them up in a bunch and cut them in ribbons that are about maybe a quarter an inch.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have that stuff cleaned and dried, you can put it in a big bowl in the fridge, and it stays for days. And the dressing, too, will keep for days. And then you just take out the amount of kale you want to use, put it in a little bowl, mm-hmm. dress it, and then sprinkle on some freshly grated Parmesan cheese. Delicious.
Yum.
As my kids say, eat and enjoy. Yeah, it's really good. It's a good
yeah,
one.
It does last longer than lettuce kind of wilts.
Absolutely. Kale will last
kale
forever.
Stays.
It's good. Yeah. And then you can, if you have any leftover, toss it in your soup.
Well, forever's a little hyperbole. It lasts a long time.
Okay.
A few days. Better than lettuce, for sure.
And of course, fresh is better. The fresher it is, the better it is.
Well, let's move on to a little meatier question. Several gardeners have written and asked about ways to improve their soil without having to spend a lot of money. And we're lucky because in Haynes, Jerry and I always think of ourselves as really great foragers. There's lots of foraging opportunities. And so you can forage a lot of things to add to your garden. Jerry?
When you think of the garden, assuming you have a garden already established, when you grow vegetables, they're not unlike children, and that is they want to eat. And when they eat, they consume things that are in the soil. It's just not as visible as when it disappears from the plate.
Hmm.
And the two major elements that plants need that can be removed fairly quickly by plants are nitrogen and potassium. Phosphorus tends to stay in the ground a little bit longer. And so the two things that you really need to think about replacing are the main things are nitrogen and potassium. Seaweed is a really good source of nitrogen, and it's available around here. Contrary to what you'd expect, you can put seaweed in the garden any time of the year, and even that amount of salt, if you put it in without cleaning it, without rinsing it, even the salt doesn't seem to bother the garden. And as it deteriorates, it kind of dissolves, so it doesn't do much to the tilth or the digability of the soil,
mm-hmm.
but it does add trace elements and it adds a fair amount of nitrogen.
Do you have to worry about stacking it too thick? Will it mold if it's too thick on the garden?
Well, if you put it on too thick, it's slippery. That's the biggest concern. If you put it on about 4 inches thick, which is what you want to do when you're mulching for the winter, And then you step on it after a couple of days, you could hurt yourself, so you have to be careful with it.
Okay.
But basically, you will not put it on too thick.
And will that decompose over the winter?
It'll mostly decompose over the winter. Mm-hmm. And what's left during the spring, you can either rake off or you can shovel it back into the soil and just let it gradually dissolve over the rest of that spring and summer.
We put lots of it in our compost, and I think when we're here in the spring, it's deteriorated.
It's pretty
weird. Once we stir it up.
The other thing that we have around here is if you're lucky enough to go by the fairgrounds and find the droppings of the brewery,
the spent mash
that they use, that's a very, very good source of nitrogen. And the same thing is you put it on the garden and it just sort of dissolves into it. Something that's a little more permanent and sustainable on a long-term basis is what's called a cover crop. If you take white clover seed or white clover from a neighbor and put it in your garden in the fall, it will establish itself in the fall, and then when it's covered with snow, it'll kind of slow down and stop growing and then reappear in the spring. And it's a funny kind of crop because it takes nitrogen from the air and converts it into nitrogen that is available to the soil plants. So it's really free nitrogen. The risk is that when it starts to go to seed, you have to till it in or shovel it up and kill it. And that usually involves two or three turns of the soil over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. So it's not a free gift. You have to work for this gift, but it's a very good source of nitrogen. It's basically free. And it adds to the tilth and the workability of the soil.
And could you just compost that into your compost?
But you have to keep turning it.
Okay, to chop it.
Once you have the mature clover plant, you can put that in your compost and turn it, and its decomposition will release the nitrogen it's gotten from the air.
What about red clover? Don't use red clover.
You can use red clover, but it doesn't spread around as easily as white clover does.
They smell so good, though.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I love clover.
And another thing that's sort of free is wood ash. Potassium is the second major element that is likely to be pulled from the soil, especially by fruiting vegetables. And if you add wood ash, and it takes a fair amount of ash. It takes about a cord of burnt wood ash to do a reasonable size vegetable garden, maybe a 20 by 30 vegetable garden.
And does it matter what kind of wood?
Not so much, no. Spruce is good. Dense wood, you get more potassium per unit shovel than you do if you use soft wood. And to continue from there, phosphorus, bones, fish bones, chicken bones, meat bones, but you have to be careful around here because the bears tend to like to dig around in that.
Right.
Also, eggshells, crab and shrimp shells, grind them up. And if you cook them for a little while, they're not quite so attractive to the animals.
Okay.
So you could probably get away with that in your compost pile.
Or if you're Melissa, you can feed them to your chicken.
The other stuff is stuff like, you know, leaves from your garden. If you cut grass, you put the grass in your compost pile. Vegetable trimmings cut into small pieces. And even a compost pile. It's not that hard to make. Just throw all your stuff in a pile.
Right.
You don't have to have a bin or
just
anything.
Just has to
like
be
that.
Aerated.
Yeah. Yeah, but watch sawdust. Sawdust, as it deteriorates, draws a lot of nitrogen from the soil.
Okay.
So you have to be sort of careful with that.
Okay.
Jerry, there's one more question. Do you have to be concerned in enriching your soil what type of soil you have? Are there different elements that you add for different soils?
Not elements, but we probably ought to take this up next week. But if you have sandy soil or clay soil, you do handle that a little bit differently so that you can basically give a better environment for the plant to live in. The sandy soil tends to have nutrients wash through it very quickly. Clay soil tends to limit the root the root's ability to excavate and go out to get more nutrients. So if you have real sandy or real clay soil, send us a question, and we'll find a way to answer it, how to help.
You'll figure it out. All right. Well, what a delight. Thank you so much, Gene and Jerry, Mo and
Belenko.
Mo and Belenko. Right. Yeah. Mutt and Jeff.
Thank you so much for coming in and giving us this information.
Thank you, Joni.
All right. Garden Talk, a weekly feature here on KHNS.